everybody, and welcome to episode 6 of your favorite chemistry podcast, Chemist Tea. I'm your host, Lucy, and I am beyond stoked today to have Asia Fee with me. Asia is a chemist, and she is the founder of Alchemist Asia, which is a science-inspired cosmetic company. And I recently bought one of her products. If you want to check out her shop, it will be linked in the episode description, but I have to tell you, oh my gosh, everything on there is so adorable, and if you are a science nerd like me, you will be geeking out as you scroll through everything that she has. Asia, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast, and why don't you introduce yourselves to our lovely listeners?
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much for reaching out. I'm so happy we were able to connect through a mutual friend, Erin. So Erin, if you're listening to this, thank you so much for the connection. Excited to meet more people interested in chemistry. Beautifully said. So yes, I'm Asia. I am the founder of my business, Alchemist Asia. We do strive to create science-inspired cosmetics to really bring beauty and science together in one space. And essentially our main goal is to reduce science stigma in the beauty industry. So what we do is really educate through our products. So as Lucy had said, some of the products that you'll see on our website will resemble things that you've seen in your lab or you've seen in your textbook or you've heard of in your courses. And the idea is to really get more people involved in STEM and scientific phenomena just through everyday products that we use. And I think it's a really great way to educate and get everybody learning about some of this stuff without actually having a chemistry degree. It's super important to us that all of this information is accessible to all, and it's never condescending. It's a great way to get everyone involved from every perspective. So very excited to be here and chat more about that.
You said something in your little own self-introduction that I really wanted to dig a little deeper with. You talked about creating Alchemist Asia to reduce science stigma in the cosmetic industry. And that really resonated with me because I feel like now online in certain magazines you see a lot of like chem phobia. They're like, oh, like, don't use this skincare product because it has chemicals in it. But me as a chemist, I look at something like that and because I'm like, you, my friend, are made out of chemicals. The apple you are eating now is also made up of chemicals. And I think it's funny when they say, oh, like if you like look at the ingredients on your moisturizer, you don't know what half of these things are. And this happened to me a little while ago, and I actually looked at the ingredients on the moisturizer I'm using, and I look at it and I'm like, oh, half of these are salts. So as a chemist, what is your opinion on this, I would say, ever growing like chem phobia, especially in the cosmetic industry, and what are some ways that you at Alchemist Asia are trying to combat the stigma?
Yeah, definitely. So this is a huge, huge thing for us just because the clean beauty space is enormous right now. Definitely a lot of people afraid of what are going into their products. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with paying attention to what you are putting on your face, essentially, especially if you have like allergies. Like that's a key essential thing to do. But there's a lot of fear mongering as far as the ingredients go. And the craziest part is a lot of people who do pursue chemistry or biology or any of your general organic chemistry, once you get into there and you start understanding why some of these names are, so you'll get like a huge name that's like maybe 15 letters long, and you're like, oh God, that's my skincare product. Like, I don't want that. And then you just find out the reason why it's so long is because all of the like suffix of the word, it just represents how many like carbons are in that molecule. Yep. So like, and it's so strange because I'm like, yeah, so the first six words in that word you're trying to describe is just telling you how many times carbon's in there. So yep. Like, it's nothing scary to think about, but So when I first started this business, that wasn't the original mindset I went to. So we didn't start our tagline until a couple months in because I started doing like vendor shows. And I remember when I first started this, it was just because I wanted like science-inspired cosmetics. Like that was the biggest thing that I wanted. I really wanted it to reflect like the stuff I get to see in the lab, and I felt like it was super cute. But when I was competing against other brands like nearby me, a lot of them were advertising as chemical-free beauty and clean beauty and natural beauty and using natural ingredients. And I would get people who would ask me like, oh, is this made of like natural ingredients? And I'm like, technically, yeah. So like, you know what I mean? Like, it was kind of like, you know, it's such a broad question. And, you know, I would be honest and I'm always transparent about what goes in it. And I'd be like, yeah, so this is the process that we make it, and this is what it's made from. And still people were really understanding, and they liked the conversation that we had. So they came in with a mindset that they were like, oh, okay, like, if I don't know these ingredients, then I'm not gonna buy her product. But after we would have a conversation, and I would explain what these products did or why the name was so long, they were genuinely like really interested. They're like, oh, that makes so much more sense. And they were able to like understand these products and then any other product from other brands they would purchase in the near future. So that's where I wanted to use our platform as more of an education platform to show our followers what's inside of our products. And we break down the ingredients and the purpose of them. So not just like, oh, this is the properties that it does, but here's the chemistry background of it and why it's not so scary than what it is on a bottle. And it's been a really neat conversation with a lot of our followers. And that's where we came up with the tagline, reducing science stigma, because there is sort of a negative association with science in your beauty products. So we see it at Sephora, we see it at Target, we see all these brands that advertise as clean beauty, and ultimately they're not doing any better. So there's ones that are like, you know, using great ingredients and they do a lot of philanthropy, but when it comes to like just their ingredients in general, that's where the term like greenwashing comes in too, is sometimes it can be a marketing ploy. So when you talk to actual cosmetic chemists, clean beauty and natural beauty are not actual industry terms. So that's not something that you can have one definition for. You can ask different brands, and this is something I did research on too. If you were to look up a clean beauty brand at Target versus like Sephora, they have different definitions. And that's where it can be a little dangerous, is people can change the definition depending on what they want it to be. So yeah. At Target, clean beauty means it only has X, Y, and Z ingredients, whereas at Sephora, only A, B, and C. And that can get really confusing for consumers and a little overwhelming. So that's why I want to have this sort of space where people can, we can learn together. So even if you choose to use clean beauty, which if that's what you want to do, I at least want to show you what the difference is between the ingredients they're telling you are bad and versus the ingredients that are just in your everyday products. So that's kind of where I stand on it.
Yeah. I think before I started recording the episode, we had a really good, like, I would say like almost like a pre-podcast conversation about something really similar when it comes to like the food industry. And I think you did mention this is also in the beauty industry, where it's about mascara. And believe it or not, bat poop in mascara. And then I think you said like it might have been something where way back when that was what they used, but due to the ever looming presence of social media and information access, something that may have been true in the past but isn't necessarily true now, that's still heavily dictating what consumers buy and what consumers want, because there's so much I think we can call it misinformation of what goes into these products. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, definitely. So the last podcast I actually did in regards to cosmetic chemistry, she had mentioned that she asked her followers a week in advance before we chatted, and she wanted to know what questions they wanted to ask a cosmetic chemist. And the number one question was is there bat poop in mascara? And I was so thrown off because I had never heard that one before. You know, I've heard about chemicals being in your beauty products, or, you know, sulfates are toxic and things like that. But bat poop, that one was completely new to me. And when we did have this conversation, the best way I could describe it as to, like, maybe why people think that there's bat poop in mascara, the example I had used was vanilla artificial flavoring. So vanilla extract, for instance, I'm sure you've seen it on TikTok, social media, where people were reacting to the true origin of vanilla flavoring, where people were saying it was coming from either the capybara or like beaver, like anal glands. And that was used maybe hundreds of years ago for this like extract, if they couldn't use like pure vanilla. And obviously we've got substitutes now, like that's changed so much since modern civilization. But it circles back up every now and then, just as many things do, like, oh, we did this like 150 years ago. Did you know that? That's crazy. And sometimes it can come back into our modern like social media feed, and then it's believed or perceived that that's still occurring today when it was something that does not exist anymore. It may have happened previously in the past, but maybe not today. But ultimately, I think that's what happened with the bat poop and mascara rumor was, you know, maybe 100 years ago, that's something they used. You know, we don't know unless we have those products to test as of right now. It also could have been cross-contamination from someone collecting that. Now that it is a vintage product, it could have had cross-contamination after being held for so many years, mm-hmm. where bat poop may have gotten in, and that could have been, you know, post-production, we're not sure, but I can tell you this much, we do not have bat poop in mascara, but definitely something that may have started on social media.
Yeah, and I think that also ties back into what we were talking about previously about the whole chem phobia, and people should, and there's no, and there's nothing wrong with people being mindful about what's going into their products. But I think, and I thank you so much for doing this at Alchemist Asia, is I think there just needs to be more education on what's a chemical in the first place, and also like what are good products and bad products. And just because a chemical name might sound complicated does not mean that it's a bad product. How did you get started with Alchemist Asia in the first place? I think you mentioned very briefly about just wanted to create science-inspired cosmetics, but what inspired you to dive into cosmetic chemistry?
Yeah, this one's one of my favorite like backstories, if I had to say so, but I would say as far back as high school. So I was madly in love with cosmetics. I did my makeup all the time. I started doing it since I was in like sixth grade, I believe. You know, I've gotten better since then, though it wasn't great. But once I hit high school, I was really adventurous with lipstick. And something that I struggled with was finding the shades that I wanted because I couldn't afford them. So you could find a cheap nude, you could find a cheap red, but you could never find a cheap like blue or purple and things like that. The only brand at the time who were making crazy colors like that were like Kat Von D, and that's like 25 starting. And that was something I couldn't afford. I was working like three jobs to pay my own bills, so that was just out of the question. I wasn't gonna drop $25 on like some expensive blue lipstick. That was just not gonna happen. So I started learning more about chemistry. I started looking into cosmetic science because I wanted to learn how cosmetics were made. And that was mostly for my own personal use because I wanted to figure out how to make lipsticks. So I started with like the basics. I started learning like lip balm and learning how emulsifiers work. So, you know, blending oil and water, which up until that point, I didn't know you could mix them. There's an old saying that oil and water don't mix, and I hate using it now because I'm like, that's not true. Like, you mix. So I stopped saying that saying because it just opened up a world, and ultimately that's actually what launched me into going into chemistry. But you know, the lipsticks that I was able to make in high school, they got the color I needed, But ultimately the quality was just not great. Like, I had friends who would request colors and I'd make them for them, but once I graduated and I went to school, I was a full-time student and full-time employee, so I didn't have time to do that stuff anymore. Went to university, and in my last semester, that's when COVID had hit. So I was not able to go to my courses. They were just online. Luckily, I was still able to work my position in the lab. So at the time, I was working as a lab intern. We were deemed essential workers because we were doing COVID research.
Oh, cool.
So that was really neat. We weren't, so a lot of the were actually working on the filters that would filter the COVID vaccine. That was something that was being worked on. Awesome stuff, great stuff happening in the lab.
That's so cool.
Yeah, but it was exhausting. It was so exhausting. So, I mean, I would work 40 hours a week and then come home to my classes, and then I would still have some free time because I couldn't do anything. I couldn't go anywhere. So on those days where I wasn't working or I wasn't in class, I started playing around with making cosmetics again. But instead of doing lipsticks, I would make bath bombs and candles and things like that. But eventually I wanted to make my own lip gloss. And I looked on Amazon and I found these little light bulb lip gloss containers, and I thought they were the cutest thing. So I was like, this will be perfect. I'll make my own lip gloss that I can wear. And when I ordered it, it came in a pack of 18. I was like, oh my God, this is too many. I just needed the one. And I was like, well, I can't send it back now, you know? So what I did was I ended up making all 18. So even though I had only anticipated making one, I made all 18 and kept the one for myself, and the rest I put on my Instagram story. And I was like, hey, so I made way too many of these, but I got creative and I made one of every color from the rainbow, put it on my story. And I was like, they're $5. Does anyone just want one of these? And they sold out. Every single one of them got sold. And I had to mail some of them because they were from friends who were out of state. And it was and a friend had approached me and she was like, you should consider doing something with this. Obviously they're selling well, maybe you should do something. So I took her advice and I started doing some research as to figure out what a business my size would need and what kind of documentation and practices and stuff like that. And after a couple months working on it, I was able to launch Alchemist Asia September 22nd of last year. So we're actually coming up on our 1 year anniversary.
Oh, wow. Exciting.
And
well, congratulations. Happy early 1 year anniversary.
So that's how we started. And when we first launched, I was making products out of my room for rent when I was renting back in California. And I would sometimes use the kitchen space, but I had my own glassware. Everything was always sanitary. I had gloves, my goggles, and my lab gear. So it would look like I had a laboratory, but in the corner of my room. And I would make all these products by hand, and I would have to sell them through Instagram. So if you wanted something, you had to DM me in order to purchase it. But after some more research and time and patience and investment, I was able to build my own website, make it more legitimate, do proper labeling. And now I can officially say we are an official business, and we've sold, across the nation. We've currently sold to over 21 different states, some being as far as New York, Alaska, Florida. It's been incredible. We even have some of our products featured here in a local boutique here in Alaska. And brand partnerships with some people I work with. It's just been incredible how much we've achieved in this past year, but that's essentially how we started. We started out of absolutely nothing, to be completely honest. No prior experience whatsoever, no money. we started from the ground up.
And looking how far you've come in 1 year, all I have to say is wow. And I think we have to give a thank you to the 18 light bulb lip gloss containers that just spontaneously showed up when you were expecting one.
Definitely, yeah. That was the starting point. And I'm so happy that it happened. And those same people who purchased are the same people who are supporting me today. So when I launched, I had nothing but love and support from my friends, my followers who were like sharing my content, and they continue to do so. And I would not be able to be where I am without that community.
I'm really interested in like your, like the chemistry process of making, let's say either a lip balm or like the hair mask. Like how much research do you do beforehand? Like what avenues do you use to like find what ingredients to use? And how is the whole formulation process like? Obviously you don't have to give me any of your secret recipes or anything, but like I'm really interested in like the chemistry behind like what you choose goes into a certain product.
Yeah, definitely. And just for the people who are going to be listening to this, if you go on Alchemist Asia, we do have like reels and different IG videos that you can watch, so you can visually see the process. It's been so fun. I love seeing how our products are made, but I will definitely step by step like tell you how it goes, because again, we're really big on transparency. We want people to be more involved on how your products are made, because I feel like if you understand and see how it's made, you understand why certain products are in there. Like an ingredient is not inside a product just because they felt like it. Like it has a purpose to it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why people are like, oh well, I don't understand why this is in here. There's so much to it. So when I'm looking into making a product, so this is similar for the other work that I do. So in addition to running my business, I am a cosmetic chemist for other brands. So they can reach out to me or private labels who want to make their own formulas. They can hire me to create these formulas and they get sent back out to them. So that way they can upscale it and manufacture it into a product that they can sell for their business as well. So I help other businesses do this. It starts out with figuring out what product you want to make and what you want it to do. So say for instance, if I want to make a let's say face mask, okay, I want it to be moisturizing, but I want it to help with my acne. Okay, so those are things that you want to look into. And you think about texture. So you start looking up and researching different kind of formulas or different benchmarks is what we call them. So say for instance, if there's a face mask that you really like, but want to make your own version of, or some like something similar to, but with your own like twist on it, mm-hmm. you would take that and really research their ingredients and look into their formulas. And from there you can kind of base, okay, these are the main ingredients I would need. Do your research and see, okay, well, this is the main ingredient that they use for theirs. I don't want to use that one. So you find substitutes and things like that. And then the most important part is doing the ratios. So it's less about how many ingredients are in it or what ingredients are in it. It's the percentage. And if the percentage is not right, it will not make the formula correct. So you can have a completely different texture product. You can have two completely different products just based off of the different percentages, but they could have the same ingredients. So it's super important that you are patient with that part. And it's the most time consuming, honestly. So once you do establish like, okay, I'm going to start with this percentage of say water, this percentage of clay or acne fighting ingredients, that's what you start with. And that's when you can order all of your ingredients and start testing it in the lab. And then from that point on, it can take a couple of days. Then you have to test your consistency and things like that, stability testing to make sure it'll last on the shelf. It may look good now, but if you let it sit there for a couple of weeks, is it gonna like get moldy? Is it gonna separate? Those are things you have to pay attention to. But depending on the product, how complex it can be, it can take months if not years. But if it's a really simple formula, it can take a month, maybe a couple weeks, quite honestly.
Wow. What's your favorite part about this whole process? And it doesn't have to be the whole making it, can be a like the whole promotion or the whole testing process, but what's your favorite part about your job as a cosmetic chemist?
My favorite part is probably hearing feedback from others. So I feel like we're really harsh on ourselves. Like, oh, like, is this great? Is this like not going to work? What if the customer hates it? Like, are they, you know, there's always like a lot of self-doubt, you know, and when you're testing your ingredients, especially someone myself where you're constantly testing stuff, it can be hard to differentiate sometimes from like two different products because you're testing it constantly. So when mm-hmm. I do send it to my clients for testing, or say if I'm at a vendor show and I'm displaying my own cosmetics that I want people to try, I love hearing the feedback from people, whether it is constructive or just genuine compliments. It's always helpful. So I love getting feedback like, oh, I really like this. I just wish the fragrance was a little bit more intense, or like, or maybe a little less intense. Like, awesome. That's great information for me. But when people have like that, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. Oh my goodness, I love this. It's so smooth. Like, it's soft. Like, I love hearing it. And I feel like that's the best part, because ultimately you are making products for consumers, and mm-hmm. if they don't like it, then you're probably doing something wrong. So yep. It's always great to hear that people are loving it, and the appreciation that they have for it too. When I tell them some of the simple ingredients, I'm like, yeah, this is how many ingredients are in it, and it's made by hand by me. And they're like, you can do that? I'm like, you can definitely do that. And again, it gets them more involved in the process, and they see it less as a, oh, I'm just trying to sell you a product. I'm trying to show you how a product works. And that's for any brand that you end up shopping for. So I feel like it's an experience for the both of us, mm-hmm. and it changes how they even perceive products that they have at home already, or maybe products that they purchase from other companies later in their life.
What drew you to cosmetic chemistry in the first place? It's kind of like a repeat of one of our earlier questions, but for me personally, I didn't really know, like, coming into college as a chemistry major, that cosmetic chemistry was a route that people with chemistry degrees and chemistry backgrounds could pursue. Maybe that was just my like pure 18-year-old ignorance talking. But did you want to go into cosmetics when you started your undergrad, or was that something that you developed later on?
So this one is probably going to be my favorite question so far, actually. So like I said, I started the idea for starting my own brand when I was in high school. And I knew I wanted to go into chemistry because I was learning about cosmetic chemistry, and it was like really interesting. But I ended up not going directly into cosmetic chemistry because of the stigma that there was even going into high school. So I was really known for the makeup girl. You know, I constantly had my makeup done. I would show up to school early with like full lashes and bright lipstick, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so they always kind of had this thing where, and I always thought it was stupid. It made sense then, but it doesn't now. And I think it's so strange that you can have makeup on and they assume that you are not intelligent, or that you're not capable of going into a rigorous field because you like to dress yourself up. And oh, yeah. I thought, how dumb, but it was enough for me to change my ways. And my mother didn't know what I was going to chemistry for. So when she would tell her customers at work, she would be like, oh yeah, she's gonna go to like cosmetology. So like everyone was under the impression I was gonna do like hair for a living too. Aww. So like all these people were just, they had these different thoughts about me that I was just kind of like vapid, you know? And that was something I didn't want associated with me. So I completely scrapped the idea of going straight into cosmetic chemistry. And I just went headfirst into chemistry, no matter what it was. I was just like, I'll figure it out there. I'll take classes and I'll figure out if I want to do, you know, organic or physical or biochem. I don't care. I'm just going to go into the hardest chemistry I can. And so like, I was so stubborn, and that's exactly what I did. And you know, every course I took, I started learning what I did like and what I didn't like, which was really great for me, learning what I wanted to do. And it led me into doing anti-cancer drug development, which I ended up really loving. And I got more credit and was, you know, considered a scientist, I feel like, truly, once I got to do my research. But even when I graduated and, you know, started this business, I was like scared to have those same thoughts again. Like, oh my gosh, like what if they think like I'm not going to use my chemistry? I'm just starting this brand because I'm the makeup girl again. But you can be the makeup girl, and you can be intelligent, you can be in science. And again, it ties back into our tagline, reducing science stigma. There's the stigma of science being in beauty, and there's the stigma of beauty being in science. So even girls who wear full makeup in the lab and are in chemistry, you got those looks, and I felt that I would be treated a different way from like my professors, because I would come into office hours for legitimate questions, but they'd be like, oh, like, did you check this? Or, you know, they'd be really condescending, but I feel like they wouldn't take me seriously because I was wearing makeup. But again, it was just all these like dumb thoughts that, you know, I was, you know, weighing in too much of what other people thought. But I didn't get into cosmetic chemistry until after I graduated, surprisingly. So I didn't get to take any courses during my undergrad, but I did get to meet chemists who were cosmetic chemists, who like work for L'Oreal. I work with some of them today, and I network with a lot of them today. And I've learned that it's nothing to be ashamed of. So that's kind of how it started, the journey of it. And it's not exactly how most cosmetic chemists get into the career path. I kind of went off of it just to fall back into it.
I think you said something that really resonated with me, and it was that you can be the makeup girl and you can still be extremely intelligent and be a scientist. But in a way, like, I feel like it's really sad that society doesn't allow that, or like there's stigma, so it feels like it's not allowed. I saw a tweet a while back. I forgot who tweeted it, unfortunately, but it said something along the same lines. Like, they say, like, normalize being girly and being, well, quote unquote girly, but in academia and in the sciences, because those two things are not separate. You can be both. And I feel like you are really helping with that through Akinesthesia. And I love like your Instagram stories that you do, where you have like the Q&A that's like, oh, do you know what goes into this product village pop quiz? full disclosure, I usually get them wrong, but I think by the process of me getting them wrong, that's when I know that I'm like, oh dang, cosmetic chemistry is extremely important and essential, like making these products, whether it's like moisturizers or lip balm. The whole process of making it is chemistry, and like without a doubt there are cosmetic chemists working for these top, you can say, name brand cosmetic companies like L'Oreal or like Clinique, because how else do they get their formulas? They use chemists, but nobody really sees it that way. But like, nobody really sees it that way, and it's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, and if I could, I want to piggyback off that. So, like I had mentioned, I got to meet some people when I was in my undergrad and where I am currently. And the most interesting part about these women who work for like L'Oreal, most people get the impression when they first meet them that, oh, okay, they, you know, they grew up in New York, they want to do makeup, and so they go into L'Oreal and they work for makeup. Like, okay, that makes sense. And they just learned how to make makeup through L'Oreal. And that's not the case. So one of the women, her name was Daniela, and oh my gosh, her story was just insane. So her research was so impressive. She went to a top school, she got her PhD, was like a full-time dancer and like all kinds of stuff. She was like active in so many different ways, and her research was so oh my gosh, niche. It was like probably the hardest research I've seen. She dealt with nanoparticles and molecular chemistry.
And oh, wow.
Impressive compounds I've ever seen, like really super complex, a blend of biochemistry and nanoparticles. And her research was essentially what helped her get into L'Oreal, because that's the same sort of innovation innovative research that they're doing for cosmetics. So she works for the hair department for L'Oreal, and that's how certain hair products work. So like, you know, hair dyes and things like that, temporary hair dyes too, they use specific type of polymers and nanoparticles, and it is a science. It's just so much more than what people think. So when they think cosmetic chemists, they think we just mix these ingredients together and we like, boom, a product pops out, you know. It's not the case. Like, there is machinery to get this to work. It is, chemistry is a process. Chemistry isn't just about chemicals. And that's definitely what we see. So she wears full face of makeup and she runs this town, you know, working for L'Oreal. But at the same time, she has so much under her belt that she can totally like use if anyone ever like tries to be like, oh, well, like, what qualifies you to do this? Like, she's like, no, like, I invented this. She's got like tons of patents too for her work. It's just, it's insane. So totally agree with that. Definitely someone you guys should check out in the future.
I kind of wanted to take our conversation to something a little more tangentially related to Alchemist Asia, unless there is something else you wanted to talk about or that you feel like we didn't cover enough.
No, go for it. I'm ready.
Awesome. Wait, before her, let me backtrack. Out of all the products available on your shop right now, which one's your favorite and why?
Ooh, okay, so I'm going to split it 50-50 on this one. So like we were talking about, you know, in our little pre-podcast, definitely our green Wittig matcha mask. That's just one of my favorites right now. I use it like once or twice a week. Quite honestly, we started out with this first formula that I actually didn't care for too much, but our followers loved it. And I decided that I wanted to reformulate it, and we were able to establish a way better formula, and it works so much better. So it's now my favorite. So that one's number one. And then my second one, which is the same kind of base that I use for those light bulb lip glosses, is our test tube lip gloss. So it looks exactly like a test tube, and it's like peppermint flavored. It's got sheer color, but the difference between this lip gloss and like typical lip glosses you buy from anywhere else is it's not made from VersaGel, so it's not tacky, it's not sticky, and ironically it doesn't smell like chemicals, because that's like a pet peeve of mine with lip products. I started this formula from like scratch, and those are my top two favorites that I use like every other day.
I love it. I first found out about your shop on Instagram, and the moment I saw it and I saw how like things are called like green Wittig and test tube lip gloss, and then I just thought it was the coolest thing, and I showed it to a ton of people who I knew liked science. I'm like, if you like science, I know you like science, and now you like skincare, check this shop out.
Heck yeah, I love it. I love to hear it.
How is it managing a small business? Do you have any partners? And especially during a pandemic, what are some of the most difficult challenges you had to overcome as a small business, and what tips do you want to give other individuals who are looking into maybe starting up their own small business?
Yeah, definitely. I think the hardest part for me, so when we relocated, so I first started off in California because that's where I grew up, that's where my business had started. I had a big life change where I moved up here to Alaska. And I think the hardest part about the process so far is like running my business is worrying about shipping. So whether I'm sourcing my own ingredients or I'm shipping out other products, it can take up to 2 weeks sometimes, or sometimes things get lost in transit because they're taking barges, they're taking planes just to get back into the lower 48 states. And it can be very difficult. So if I run out of ingredients, it's the same process. It could take forever to get up here. Sometimes companies don't actually ship to Alaska. So there's a lot of places that restrict shipping to Hawaii and Alaska because they are hard to get to. And that's made things super difficult. So I had to reconsider my prices. I had to reconsider products, which ones were worth keeping on the website. We used to have a lot more, but I wanted to condense it down just to our best ones, and ones that I know for sure are just like high quality and worth keeping on there. But yeah, I think that was something that became really difficult. But if I was going to share any advice to other people who want to start their own businesses, definitely do a lot of research. Don't rush yourself. Make sure that you are well established. Maybe if you're going to start on social media, start with your best app. So if you sell better on Facebook or you have a bigger following on Facebook, start there. If you have a better following on Instagram, start there. You can branch out later once you get like more established, but ultimately you want to find that community and stay consistent with them. And for us, it's our Instagram. So we started with Instagram and we really built the community, and then we branched out to, you know, Twitter and Facebook and like even our LinkedIn, which have like a lot lower, but we still get to reach a whole new audience. So eventually you'll want to get to those audiences just because that it's more clients in your mm-hmm. feed, but really establish yourself on one piece of social media and then start from there. I guess branching off of that as well, you know, make community not only with the people who are following you to purchase your items, but fellow small businesses. A lot of them are there to support you and want to help you out too. So, you know, always reach out to them and chat with them. They give like great resources and, you know, advice. And a lot of them are the reason why I have the support I do. So very grateful.
You did mention that you graduated from undergrad like right in the middle of the pandemic, and you started Alchemist Asia. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Like also like during the pandemic. Would you still have started Alchemist Asia had 2020 been different? What advice or what do you recommend other, let's say, undergrads or other students from high school, maybe perhaps all the way to graduate school? Any advice for them for maybe looking for opportunities given circumstances like what we're in now or what we were in a year ago?
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, yeah. I do not think Alchemist Asia would be here today had it not been for COVID. So it is one of the silver linings. You know, it's really unfortunate how it has affected all of us, but ultimately it was that push to really do it. I feel like, you know, maybe eventually I would have started it, but I don't think I would have started it sooner than like maybe what I would have had COVID not existed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really grateful for that opportunity. And I think if I were still living the life I was, I would have been stuck at the job that I wasn't 100% feeling. You know, I loved the people I was working with. I loved the work I was doing for the most part when I was in the lab, but a lot of it was desk work, and it was 40 hours a week. I was kind of miserable. I didn't like sitting in the office. I wanted something to help me grow. And when you're doing work that's too repetitive, it's no good for anybody. But yeah. It does tie into the next segment that I was gonna, you know, use to answer your question, which is remote opportunities. So when I did have that huge life change where I needed to move, I had to end up quitting my job. But before I did, I started doing more research as far as like, you know, I was trying to apply to jobs out here in Alaska, but you know, because I was still a California resident, it wasn't really working. So I was like, okay, well, if I look into remote opportunities, those ones do not rely on where you live. And so if I can secure one now, and when I move, I'll have a job when we move. And that's how I got in touch with The World Within Us. So I actually worked as an intern for them, and I continue to work with them today, like secondhand man as far as like running their social media. So even though it wasn't something chemistry related, it really got my foot in the door. I did use my experience in my chemistry club experience. I was the social media manager there. That's what essentially scored me the job. And because I, you know, opened myself to that opportunity, she helped me network and sent me an opportunity with one of her friends who runs a business that is now using me as a brand partner. And through them, I got to meet other beauty founders and I got to be on a beauty panel. And through that, I met even more people. And it just, the list goes on and on and on. I just, this little foot in the door opened so many doors after that. And something I try to showcase so much more now that a lot of our things are virtual or remote is letting students know that there are opportunities for them, paid too. And I like to emphasize the paid part because, you know, you never want to do this free labor, you know, just mm-hmm. because you're on your laptop does not mean it's
you're not working
laborious. Yeah. And I think that's the hardest thing is like, oh, well, they're just doing this remote job. I shouldn't pay them that much. Don't buy in. You're worth everything you do. So my advice for you guys, I'll try and keep it brief on here, but if you want more details before I do get into it, I have an entire guide on my Instagram, or you can go on my blog, and I have details on remote opportunities and where to apply, not just LinkedIn. Like, LinkedIn's not the only option. I'm talking Instagram, Twitter, you can find jobs there. And I go into detail as to how you can do it, but to tie it up, I just want to tell all those students out there that are looking for these things, there are job opportunities, there's club opportunities, there's internship opportunities, there's fellowship opportunities, so much on social media because we're changing so much and they are virtual. So if you struggle to find work because you help support your family at home, or you're taking too many courses, or you know, you don't have a car and you can't physically get to a job, these are for you. These are for those people who need those opportunities and need a way out and still want to work in the chemistry field. You don't have to dedicate yourself to a job that you don't like or can't really do or not make enough for because you think that's your only option. There's so much more. And that's something I want to highlight a lot.
And I think you bring up a, thank you so much for all of that. And I think you bring up a great point that, like, it's not just COVID and the pandemic that's causing people to have to work remotely. And I personally believe that even as we slowly start to get back into person, back to in-person work, that we should still have remote opportunities available for the exact same reason that you brought up, such as you might not have a car or the means to get to somewhere, or somebody might have too many responsibilities at home. And I'm a, I think now my view of remote work has changed so much, and I'm so grateful that you have these resources for people to get these opportunities. And for all of our listeners, the links to Asia's blog, Instagram, will all be in the episode description, so you can easily find those resources should you be interested. Unfortunately, we do seem to be running out of time for our episode, but so I would really like to close off with our classic chemistry question, which I ask all of my guests: what is your favorite kind of tea?
My favorite kind of tea?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that is so mean.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So yeah, there is definitely one though. Genmai, if you're familiar with that one. If mm-hmm. any of you listening are not of Asian descent, Genmai cha is a green tea. It's more on the earthy side, and it's really known for, if you look at it, it actually has small popcorn in it. You'll have to look it up. It looks a little crazy, but it's so great. You don't need to sweeten it whatsoever. It's just, it's good iced, it's good hot. It's one of my favorites that I grew up on, and I stock up on when I go to Chinatown. So I feel like it's one that doesn't get advertised all too much just because mm-hmm. it's not matcha, it's not chai, but yeah. It's delicious.
I know what you're talking about, and I can second that it is delicious. And I think a couple weeks ago, it might have been when I first reached out to you about coming on the podcast, you put something on your Instagram story of you like seeping some tea and like the little tea like infuser thing.
Oh yeah,
something chemistry related, but I forgot what it was.
Oh yeah, I saw on Instagram, surprisingly, there was a girl who had a tea infuser, and I love tea. I have like different kind of tea infusers. I have one shaped like a strawberry, one shaped like a walrus, like all kinds of crazy ones. She had one that was shaped like a test tube. It was literally a glass test tube with a cork like topper, and instead of like little holes like what you normally see in your infusers, they're little slits at the bottom, so it's perfect for the like smaller leaf teas, so like your Genmaicha where you get a lot of particles. You could put it in there and you can steep your tea out of it. Oh my gosh, it is the coolest thing ever. So like I use tons of puns of chemist tea, and like I think that's definitely something you should market off of, if I have to say so.
If she's still selling that, I will find it, and for I will link the link for the test tube tea infuser also in the episode description, because that is just too cute and I want more people to know about it.
And there's a link in my bio as well. I have an Amazon link to it, so you can buy it off of like my Amazon, and I have like photos of it too. You can see what it looks like.
Too cool, too cute. Yeah. Now I know what I'll be using to make the tea I drink while I record these episodes.
Heck yeah.
Casual product placement, but hey. Well, Asia, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. If there's any last things you want to let our listeners know, feel free to share them now.
Yeah. First off, thank you so much for listening. As much as I do want you to visit Alchemist Asia as well, I do want to let you know that we are big on science, but we're also big on inclusivity. So we are a space for everybody, education from every perspective, from every gender, from every culture. We want you to experience science in the best way possible. So we want to blend holistic and science together. And if you're looking for a space to do so, we are that space. Whether you end up purchasing a product or you just want to feel welcome, that's who we are, and we're excited to meet you.
Well, thank you again, Asia, and thank you to all of our listeners for listening to the podcast, sharing the podcast, just all of your love and support that you've given this project. Once again, the links to Asia's website, Alchemist Asia, and all of her social media will be in the episode description. Also in the episode description, you can find a link to my Ko-fi page. We are an unsponsored podcast, so we really appreciate all monetary support that we can get through the Ko-fi. And thank you again for listening, and we hope you have an amazing rest of the day. Bye-bye.